Hello, brothers and sisters. I'm Sister Ann Shields, and welcome once more to Food for the Journey. In these few days before Thanksgiving, I am sure that there are organizations and associations in your area that are asking for contributions so that the poor may have a Thanksgiving meal, or that they may have warm coats or shoes or boots or whatever the case may be. We hear that every year, and we should respond to it, definitely should respond to it. But I came across the other day something that Pope John Paul said during his pontificate. He was teaching about alms and almsgiving, and I want to pass it on to you because I think between now and Christmas, it's one of the key times when we're encouraged to give alms, to care for the poor, care for the needy. And I want you to hear what he says about it. He said, "The practice of alms deeds is recommended in the whole sacred text, both in the Old and the New Testament." But he said, "We must find again the real meaning of alms, and above all, the determination and the joy of alms deeds." A Greek word. So the word alms comes from the Greek. A Greek word etymologically means compassion and mercy. That's what alms means, compassion and mercy. Various circumstances and influences of a reductive mentality have distorted and deconsecrated its original meaning, sometimes reducing it to that of a spiritless and loveless act. You know, I often think of the Salvation Army, especially here in the United States, the Salvation Army who does so much good for the poor. And they ring their bells, especially in the Christmas season, asking for you to make a donation. And I've done it myself. I'm struck by walking by one of the buckets that they have and just kind of throwing my change in. And that's what John Paul says reduces it to a spiritless and loveless act. Now, throw all the change you can, throw the money you can into the Salvation Army bucket. I'm not at all saying we shouldn't do it. It's the motive with which we do it that's important. And John Paul is saying it needs to be positive. It needs to be, "Lord, by this little offering of what I have, I make this little offering that others may know your love, that others may be cared for and provided for." That makes it into an act of love rather than just reaching in your hand, seeing what change you have and throwing it in. John Paul goes on to say, "But alms in itself must be understood essentially as the attitude of a person who perceives the needs of others, who wishes to share his own property with others, who will say that there will not always be another in need of help, spiritual in the first place, support, comfort, brotherhood, and love. The world is always too poor in love. The reason why I do what I do. Or do I dash off a check? Or do I take time to offer that check? Even right there as I'm writing it, Lord, I offer this to you as an act of love." We don't know when our motives are purified. We don't see the value that that act, that simple act, may have for the salvation of someone else because of God's love. John Paul says, "Thus defined, to give alms is an act of very positive value, the goodness of which must not be doubted, and which must find in us a fundamental readiness of heart and spirit, without which there is no real conversion to God." Our hearts should be turned more to Him. We should, in a sense, blaze with greater love of God because we have joined Him in an act, however small, if it's a nickel. The amount, in terms of motive, the amount doesn't matter. What matters is the intention. He says, "Even if we do not have at our disposal riches, and concrete capacities to meet the need of our neighbor, we cannot feel dispensed from opening our heart to his necessities and relieving them as far as possible. Remember the widow's mite. She threw into the treasury of the temple only 2 small coins, but with them all her great love. Take a look at this area, brothers and sisters, as we enter this holiday season, as we enter from Thanksgiving through Christmas into the beginning of the new year. Look at that. Ask yourself, what can I do to bring a blessing to others and to do it with the right heart? Again, what you give, if you're giving a little out of your need, that's always helpful. Don't just give your excess. Give a little out of your need and offer it for great love. You'll see when you stand before the judgment seat of God what your gift, even if it were only a nickel, because that was all you had. God looks at the heart. Remember the widow. God looks at the heart. The reading today from Daniel chapter 2, verses 31 to 45. This is Daniel coming to the king now, and he prophesies. In your vision, O king, you saw a statue, very large and exceedingly bright, terrifying in appearance as it stood before you. The head of the statue was pure gold, its chest and arms were silver, its belly and thighs bronze, its legs iron, its feet partly iron and partly tile. While you looked at the statue, a stone which was hewn from a mountain without a hand being put to it struck its iron and tile feet, breaking them in pieces. The iron, tile, bronze, silver, and gold all crumbled at once, fine as the chaff on the threshing floor, and some in the wind blew them away without leaving a trace. But the stone that struck the statue became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. The king has been asking Daniel for an explanation of his dream, and Daniel's able to say what he dreamed, and he was right. This is the act of God. This was the dream, the interpretation we shall also give in the king's presence. You, O king, are the king of kings. To you the God of heaven has given dominion and strength, power and glory. Men, wild beasts, and birds of the air, wherever they may dwell, he has handed over to you, making you ruler over them all. You are the head of gold. But another kingdom shall take your place, inferior to yours, and then a third kingdom of bronze which shall rule over the whole earth. There shall be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron. It shall break in pieces and subdue all these others. He's saying, your kingdom is going to crumble. Look at the courage. Just as iron breaks in pieces and crushes everything else, the feet and toes you saw, partly of potter's tile and partly of iron, means that it shall be a divided kingdom, but yet have some of the hardness of iron. As you saw the iron mixed with clay tile, toes partly iron and partly tile, the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. The iron mixed with clay tile means that they shall seal their alliances by intermarriage, but they shall not stay united any more than iron mixes with clay. In the lifetime of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed or delivered up to another people. Rather, it shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and put an end in them, and it shall stand forever. This is the meaning of the stone you saw hewn from the mountain without a hand being put to it, which broke in pieces the tile, iron, bronze, silver, and gold. The great God has revealed to the king what shall be in the future. This is exactly what you dreamed, and its meaning is sure. Brothers and sisters, go back and read. This is only taking excerpts. Go back and read the rest of chapter 1 and into verse 30 of chapter 2. And then look at this reading again. See the bravery and the wisdom and the intelligence of this young man. And it all came from God. And we look at the gospel for today, Luke chapter 21, verses 5 to 11. While some people were speaking about how the temple was adorned with costly stones and votive offerings, Jesus said, so the people, let's just stop there for a moment. The people are looking at the beauty of the temple, and it was beautiful. That temple was going to be destroyed. That temple was soon to be destroyed. But they're admiring it. They're looking at it. They say, this is just marvelous. I mean, it's overwhelming, this gorgeous temple with all its jewels. And it just radiated a kind of authority. And they were in awe of it. And they were very proud of it. And Jesus says to them, all that you see here, the days will come when there will not be left a stone upon another stone that will not be thrown down. In 70 AD, the Romans razed the temple to the ground. Then they ask him, teacher, when will this happen? And what sign will there be when all these things are about to happen? And he answered, see that you do not be deceived. For many will come in my name, saying, I am he, and the time has come. Do not follow them. When you hear of wars and insurrections, do not be terrified, for such things must happen first, but it will not immediately be the end. And then he said to them, nations will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be powerful earthquakes, famines, and plagues from place to place, and awesome sights and mighty signs will come from the sky. Brothers and sisters, we are God's temple on one level. On one level, one explanation, we are the temple of God. And God dwells in us. It's the temple of our body, our mind, our spirit, the gifts we've been given. Is that temple used to radiate his glory, to give him honor, to give him joy? Does the temple of our body, our mind, our spirit, does it reach out to bring the gospel to others by our thoughts, our words, our actions? We're told several times in Scripture that we are the temple of the living God. I think you can make the connection. Is your life, your body, your spirit under the authority of the devil? Is it under the authority of the world? Or are you under the authority of God? You were made for his glory. You were made for his honor. Ask God, in a certain sense, brothers and sisters, ask God to reorient you. You may be only 1 degree off track, but that can take you pretty far away. Ask God to reset the compass, so to speak. When we begin to enter these days of Advent and the incredible year of mercy that is very soon upon us, one of the things that we really need to do is reset the compass, whether it's in body, mind, spirit, or everything. Reset the compass. Let our lives be a radiant temple of his glory for our salvation and the salvation of others. God bless you. As we prepare for this year of mercy, which will begin this December, I want to make available to you a free copy of my booklet, Captured by Mercy. I'm going to be speaking on this program a great deal about the true meaning of mercy, but I'd like you to have a free copy of my booklet now, Captured by Mercy. You can receive it simply by calling this number, 1-800-282-4789.